this off. We do have a few announcements to go with. We're going to start.
I'm Roger.
Jim Gebhard, he has a special video he requested to share with the group. I have not seen this, so we'll find out what the content entails. I understand that there is a little bit of a car theme. Jim, any other lead-in do you want to provide?
Well, you know, it's meant to be part of that part, but anyway. Chevrolet does a special commercial for Christmas every year. You may have seen them in the past. They're really, really special commercials.
No, I can't hear you either.
Really? Okay. I guess I need to.
There you go.
It doesn't have to be anything super formal, right?
It's not.
I think even from there, you want me to hit play?
Got people sitting
there. Okay, got it.
He was the center.
Okay, I know it's no surprise it'll be a car thing. Anyway, every year Chevrolet does a special Christmas commercial. And they can be very emotional. So get ready for this. But they try and touch the heartstrings of the public. And this is really well done. But get ready for me.
Probably not. I'm afraid of that.
Is it going to work?
I don't know. We have to play.
I don't know if this is going to happen. Yeah, I'm playing here. I'm 20 seconds in. We might have to abandon.
We'll do it at the end.
Okay. That's what you had to get ready for.
You got the whole time to get ready.
We got a link. You're trying to do it. It's been broadcast once. I'm real TV. They're so hard.
All righty. Audio video stuff here. All right, we're going to move on here. So what I did want to talk about with the season, we have a number of events and concerts that are really taking place in the
We lost the sound.
Are you? Hey, just Bob, are you able to see my screen?
There's a black cat and there's a ladder that we can't see that's off the screen. Anybody got a mirror? Let's get them all out of the way.
All right, let me attempt to share my screen again. Am I in your meeting?
You are in the meeting. Oh, as a matter of fact, you are in the meeting.
All right. Took a couple minutes to say the least. All right. Appreciate your patience on that. So what I wanted to bring your attention first was the concerts for this weekend. So in the email that I sent out, you're looking for greeters and ushers. I am signed up to be an usher here for this Friday night. Let me just bring you over to the Sign Up Genius. There's the link in the email. It brings you over to this page right here. And that's more about serving, right? So this is for Friday night and also for Sunday. Eric, maybe if you could just fill us in a little bit more just on the content of the concert festival.
So, despite all the audiovisual and challenges we're having this morning, we're using live musicians for the concert. There will be no video required for the concert. We will have bell ringers. We will have camera operators that are better than the camera operator you've got this morning. In fact, the guy who made your breakfast is one of the camera operators. But everybody needs a chance to participate. A couple of choir guys are here this morning. It's a busy, busy, busy week. So when are the concerts? They're Friday night at 7:30 and Sunday at 3:30. Excellent. How do you get your tickets?
None.
There are no tickets. It drives me a little nuts. So we have postcards that you can hand to someone and say, it would be great to see you Sunday at 3. It would be marvelous to see you Friday night with your whole Sunday school class, and your homeowners association is invited too. So there is no limit to the number of people that you can put in our sanctuary. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. We have new pieces of music. We have a live orchestra. They have live instruments. Nothing is simulated. And the children that you see are actual children. They may not ring the bells, but they're actual children. So I hope you will all come. It is a great way to invite people to our campus and to see the church. Prove me wrong. Fill the sanctuary up. No tickets are needed. We will need some ushers. And so the link you got in your email will let every one of you sign up, you and a friend, to come usher.
Got it up? Perfect. Yeah, thanks so much, Art. What other announcements that we want to share?
Well, I couldn't manage to link into that form to fill out the usher, so I'm just showing up that.
Okay. Yeah. The sign-up was unsuccessful?
Yeah, but I'm just going to come in.
Okay. If you just show up like Richard, the guy you're looking for is Todd Lepcocker. You remember him? He came and spoke at men's breakfast.
Okay, 7 feet
tall. He's about this tall, and if he's not playing football or doing protection for somebody, he'll usher for you. So look for Todd.
He's that tall.
All right. I think now to our featured portion of the program, I want to introduce our guest speaker, Mr. Jim Dowlin. I first met Jim when we were serving on the foundation board together. I admired his leadership, so as someone who I wanted to stay connected with. Sally and Jim joined RUMC in 1985. Jim has served on the trustees board, the foundation board, the financial committee, the stewards board, 4 terms as president of the Bereans, senior high school counselor, and also as an usher. Sally was on staff at the adult education director for 11 years and now teaches Bible study. Needless to say, he's been quite engaged in leadership capacities, both him and Sally. Both their kids, Seth and Megan, went through the youth programs. Please welcome Jim here to our men's breakfast. Jim.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I think I'm well known around here. But for 38 years, I've been known as, you're Sally's husband. And not Jim. But I wear that moniker with pride. Thanks for the invitation to speak today. I'm honored that Kevin extended the invitation. I don't know why to me. But some of you have been up here talking about your faith walks. A little uneasy, and many of you I don't know, so when I combine all that, it's not exactly my sweet spot, and I hope you'll understand. I may read most of this to get it right and stay on the time, but I'm glad to be here this morning. I was thinking on the way in this morning, my anxiety, what This is when in my work world, I spoke weekly to hundreds of people and once or twice a year to 1,500, 2,000 people, teleprompters, bright lights. And here I am with brothers in Christ talking about my faith walk, and I'm panicked. So anyway, I hope you'll understand that, and your understanding and your hospitality is appreciated. So while not very exciting, I'm going to talk about my lifeline. I'll do that in just a few minutes, and then I'll finish with some lessons that I learned along the way. And maybe you'll find those of interest. Maybe they'll resonate with you. This first part will be like, for those of you who follow Monday Night Football, this would be Chris Berman's 3-minute review of the weekend. So I grew up in a small farming community in central Illinois. And things were simple, very straightforward. For those, any Midwesterners out there? Yeah, you know, sugar in your iced tea was an exciting day. corn and soybeans and hogs as far as you can see in any direction. The land pretty much as flat as that table. Black dirt, glacier laid it down very good. People didn't lock their doors. It was a strong work ethic that prevailed there. You had two colleges, great schools. It was a great place to grow up. But if you couldn't talk about corn and soybean futures, or your garden, or the weather, there wasn't a lot to talk about. So I had to learn that. But very conservative place to grow up. I played every sport I could play. Loved sports. Strangely, golf became a passion of mine at a young age. And I still play competitively. I have all my life a very low single-digit handicap. And I love to just watch sports in person on TV. It's a great hobby of mine. I was churched, so to speak. But I don't recall it as something that was important. But I was churched. Sally and I were baptized, confirmed, and married in the same Methodist church. Her father was a Sunday school superintendent, and it was a good time. My mother got sick when I was a junior in high school, and she died a month before I graduated from high school with cancer. It was a difficult time, but that's when I met Sally, and I started dating her when she was 14. And I was 17, so trust me, her father was way, way more trusting than I was with my daughter Megan at that age. I attended the University of Illinois and received my BS in civil engineering. I recall my father, dropping me off in a strange town, 45,000 students. And Main Street in Campus Town was lined with National Guardsmen on one knee with automatic weapons. And it was not a happy time as the Vietnam War loomed. Many of you can relate to this. It loomed over me. I drew a high draft number my freshman year and maintained my 2S deferral. Sally joined me at the U of I 2 years later. And while she finished her BS degree, I did my MS in civil engineering. Sally and I were married along the way. She was 20. There is no way that my daughter would even thought about coming to be married at 20. I took my first engineering job in Houston, Texas, and off we went to the big city, didn't know a soul. I worked offshore for 7 years all over the world. That was the first thing I did. I became attached to weather, barbecue, and country and Western music. Really didn't want to return to any snow, and I haven't. 1981, I stumbled into the garbage business, and I mean that literally and figuratively. I went to work for a company called BFI, which is now Republic. Rose in rank and responsibility there, and then after a short stop in Memphis, settled here in Atlanta in 1985. 2000, they were acquired. I made a change to Waste Management. Many of you are aware of that company. they had big changes, and I became part of that change. I worked there for 20 years, and the last 10 on their senior leadership team in the corporate headquarters of Houston. I retired in 2018, stayed on retainer for a couple of years until the pandemic, and then that's it. Along the way, we had two children, Seth and Megan. Seth's a university professor of religious studies out on the West Coast, and Megan, our daughter, is a physical therapist in Woodstock. And she has two children, a daughter, a son, and four grandkids. And now, as Bum Phillips said, he's the famous Houston Oiler coach, I don't do much, and I don't start that till 11 a.m. Much of my time is spent either in Bible study, watching our grandchildren's sporting events, any of you can relate to this, helping Sally in the garden, physical fitness, trying to stay healthy, volunteer work, travel, and as you might imagine, lots of golf. A lot more than I thought I would. I've also taken up my first non-physical hobby. I'm trying to learn to play the piano. And my mother always wanted me to learn to play it. And that is a daunting task for an old man with shaking hands. But pray for me on that. So that's my story. Maybe too much detail, but I always enjoyed on the road with other employees and other people. I always enjoyed hearing their story. It's a great way to fill a conversation during a dinner. So what, if anything, did I learn along the way as it might relate to my spiritual walk? These are nothing new. They're not special. They're in no particular order, but I suspect some of these will resonate with you. So, first, it was the importance of my family and being in Christian community. God made us that way from the beginning, so we would have a sense of what his family does and what it would look like. For me, there was a cost along the way. I put too much emphasis on my work, and I often took my family for granted. I wasn't a bad dad, but I didn't take the importance of family as seriously as I should have, or as I now watch my children. And that's important too. As you know, there's no do-over. But one of the few blessings of something I'm not very proud of, but I have 5 million frequent flyer miles on Delta, and I have close to another and a million miles in a corporate jet. So along the way, I developed this odd habit, but I would watch these wonderful reunions or union introductions for the first time or reunions of family. And maybe you've seen these, but I would commend this to you. I would sit at the, before I went to the car, I'd sit at the top of the escalators in Hartsfield or wherever I was, and watch these families as an example, you know, grandparents or parents running, tears in their eyes to see this new baby for the first time, often from another country. I remember vividly watching a father just crush his son with a bear hug in Puerto Rico coming back from military service. I watched the little ones. And the little ones can't get in the group hug, so I watched them cry and just hug a leg. And unfortunately, on two occasions, I've watched a fallen soldier come back to Hartsfield and watched on the tarmac as the children and the wife left behind hugged the father. And I think all these are glimpses of what it's going to be like when we meet our Father in heaven. And so I would just commend that to you. It sounds a little strange, but if we can do that as humans, imagine what it's going to be like. I can only imagine what it's going to be like when I meet my Father. With regard to Christian community, RUMC is and has been our home away from home, for most of you in this room. Virtually all of our social being revolves around RUMC and the Maria Sunday School class. And how fortunate I was to be blessed with this community of faith, the men in this room. Second, just as important, was the importance of relationship with our spouses and my spouse. In less than a month, Sally and I will celebrate 49 years of marriage. And I wish I could say they were all divine. And most of them were, but some just tried to get through it. And marriage is designed to be perfect, but it just isn't. And later on, I learned that I had really misunderstood what was important to her, and to some extent, vice versa. And I don't know if any of you have read this. It's a quick read, but the author is a guy named Gary Chapman. It's called The Five Love Languages. Mm-hmm. And we went through that exercise, and I can't commend it enough to you. Brought our marriage to a whole new level because I, for the first time in my life, understood what was important to her. And I told our counselor, I said, how come they didn't give this when we got married? He said, well, the book wasn't written then. But I'm not trying to sell books, but a thought on that. Third, God never leaves us, never left me, never will leave me. In the winter of 2021 and spring of 2022, I experienced a serious and unexpected battle with anxiety and depression disorder. It's not something most men are comfortable talking about, but I've gotten there now. And I've gotten there so that maybe I can help somebody else that's been through it, because I found out going through it, I wasn't alone. During that experience, it was helpful. I read Max Lucado's Anxious for Nothing. I wanted life to be perfect, and it just wasn't. And I worried about everything. And it finally took a very painful toll. The Bible uses the word merimnate. I thought this is fascinating. This is a compound of the word divide and the noun mind. So anxiety, to be anxious, is to divide the mind. And it took a meat cleaver to my thoughts, my energy, my focus, sent my awareness in the wrong directions. You know, I was always either concerned about back then or out there and couldn't enjoy the moment. And I had to learn to be grateful again. I started making a list of what I was grateful for. And slowly, my condition began to get better. Now, the fix did include medicine. It did include wonderful Christian psychiatrists and psychologists. But while I may have thought differently, God never left me through that whole experience, one I never want to go through again. I pray daily now that he will continue to chase me like what I call him, the hound of heaven. I also developed a profound new appreciation for mental health. I grew up in a family where it was psychological. So the fix was just toughen up and get over it. You know, you got nothing to be depressed about. You got nothing to be anxious about. And I couldn't have been more wrong. So maybe by now, you know, by me being open about it, I can help somebody else, because it's I wouldn't wish that on anybody. Next, study the word. While working, I found every excuse on earth. I'm too busy to study the word. I did commit to Bible study upon my retirement. And over the last 5 years, the Bible study has been very rewarding to me, particularly when your wife's the teacher. I now know a lot more about what is in the Bible, but more importantly, I know far more about the character of the author who inspired the words. More specifically, I learned about the importance of biblical context and setting, history. Through my own vanity, I often personalized myself in the wrong role. I thought I was the good guy. And I'll give you a couple of examples that you'll know immediately. The parable of the prodigal son. You know, I was always the one who stayed home. Hell no. I was the one that went away. I was the one that needed grace. Jonah was another example. I was always Jonah, you know, don't make me go over there. These people are bad people. I don't need to go there. I wasn't Jonah. I was the Ninevites. I needed Jonah. I needed the message. And one of my favorites, the parable of the workers in the vineyard.
Mm.
Every time I was the one that started work at 8 o'clock. How dare you pay somebody that came in at 5 o'clock? I was the one that was coming in at 5 o'clock. And I just had this great internal fairness doctrine. But when I realized how broken I was, and we are, I don't want fairness when God judges me. Fortunately, he's just, but he's also gracious. And I always say, I need grace because I don't know what it is. Next to last, ministry is full-time business for us men. Much of my life, I believe that in order to be in ministry to God, you need to be a pastor. And once I accepted Christ and his grace, I learned that I was and could be in ministry at all times. That's true for us in this room, working or retired. I found out that treating everyone with the same care and respect was easy and the right thing to do. Whether I was talking to the board of directors, a Wall Street analyst, heavy equipment mechanic, or an exasperated customer, I didn't have to evangelize in the hallways. I just made my daily corporate conduct my ministry. And it can occur even at a $20 billion Fortune 100 company. So I hope you folks take that to heart. Lastly, life's not fair and life's not perfect. Two different things. My father-in-law, who was one of my idols, died very young. But he told me life is not fair. So you need to understand that. And my prayer life was generally focused on blessings that are, while honorable, and they're good, they were circumstantial and temporal. Things like health and family and employment, etc., they can all turn on a dime. A diagnosis, a car wreck, etc. The author of Hebrews calls these things shakeable. And I'm learning over time to put more emphasis on my gratitude for our God, the giver of those blessings, and his love for us through Christ. That is unshakable and eternal. So I hope this was helpful. I'll close there. I can take any questions. Otherwise, I have a question for the tables. But any questions of me?
I want to get clarification. Who's got more miles, Mr. Fletcher or you? Bob, how many do you have?
We travel a lot together. We always compare. I flew before they counted.
That's not fair. Because my family got to enjoy a lot of trips that we otherwise just wouldn't have taken. So I always told them, you know, when Dad misses all the birthdays and all the anniversaries, there is payback.
So you said you started dating when Sally was 14. You got married when she was 20. You lost your mother and she lost her father early.
Yeah.
How did God show up in that time for you?
Well, I think it's interesting. I had two older sisters. We all married our childhood or our high school sweethearts. I think he may have placed Sally in my life because 17, you know, just everything became abnormal for me. You didn't have a mom, and you need a mom. You're not done growing up yet. And Sally didn't become my mom figure, but she became just kind of a key piece. And you know, Sally's dad was different. He was a giant. I'll share this with you. When I was dating Sally, I was probably a senior in high school, and we were in the basement of their house, and I used the Lord's name in vain. And he came to, and he was a big man, just a Christian giant, gentle giant. And he came to the top of the stairs and he said, "Jim, we don't say that in this house." And he was kind. I have never forgotten that moment the rest of my life. I don't do that. And I hope he knows what an impact he had, just that little moment of doing and saying the right thing and doing it. He didn't hold it against me. It was over. So I missed also because my father was struggling with the loss of his wife. So he kind of became a second father to me. And so God was there walking with me the whole way.
Hey, Jim, your love for golf, I've heard this story, and some folks probably haven't, but I think it's a great story. Will you tell quickly the story of playing golf out in Phoenix on one particular hole where you had to walk through a tunnel, and you got a few blocks, and there was a big horseshoe all the way around?
So do you – anybody watch golf? It's the worst thing on earth to watch on TV. There's a tournament the first week in February that our waste management sponsors in Phoenix, Waste Management Phoenix Open, surprise. And they kind of carved out a first. They built a stadium hole. Typically, there might be 50,000 people, not in Atlanta, but most venues, 50,000 people would be there at a day. This particular tournament, just because of the setting, they'll have 200,000 on Saturday, but they'll have close to 30 or 40,000 on that one hole in a stadium. And when you, even, I played a lot of competitive golf. I've been in front of crowds before, but when you come out of that tunnel and there's 50 or 40,000 people and 39,000 of them have had too much to drink and they're ready to heckle you, your knees start shaking. And I managed to survive all those, but each year I loved it because it was so in my element, but I hated going through that tunnel because you could hear the rumble. It's like going into the lion's den, and they didn't care who it was. If you hit a bad shot, they were going to boo and yell and throw things. It's just kind of one of a kind for the tour.
But you part of the hole.
I did every time, in fact. Wow. It's a little shaky, but I got it done.
I just want to thank you for your openness about what you've been through under your life journey. I think it just it meant so much to us and what Christianity is all about. So thank you.
Thank you for that. I liked what Kevin, iron shapes iron. So, yeah.
I don't know if you can talk much more about, you mentioned anxiety, depression, disorder. Was that some of that coming from your leaving the corporate world after many years, your environment, just trying to readjust, or I don't know if you share that? Or
I think my wife would tell you that is a big piece of it, that I was wound like a rubber band, just as tight as you could go for 40 years and didn't put much planning into my retirement. And I had a little bout of high blood pressure, and I got to thinking I was going to die. And my doctor was saying, "It's medicine, Jim. We're going to get this fixed." And I didn't realize how quickly you could. I learned that this isn't it. There's a psychological element, but I learned that this is biochemistry. When your serotonin levels get out of whack, it's no different than any other physical disease, whether it's cancer or diabetes or whatever. And like that's the piece I have a new profound appreciation for, is that it just isn't as simple as saying get over it. And Sally is, as much as we love each other and she's a dear heart, you know, she is not Nurse Nancy. So we would just kind of sit there for 6 months and look at each other because I carried the conversation. Well, I couldn't talk anymore. Couldn't leave the house. It was unbelievable experience because I've been in operations all my life where you fix things and you man up and you whatever you have to do. So
yeah, many men identify with their work. That's who they are.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's gone. You got to readjust a whole new environment. You leave your work friends, etc.
Yeah. I always tell people, they say, "Do you miss it?" I said, "You know, I don't miss the circus. I just miss the clowns." But it, all of you can relate. It becomes your second family, and then you lose your family. And if you haven't thought about what are you going to backfill that void with, it can be troublesome.
Well, thank God you had gone.
I did, and in fact, you know, when I was going through that, it was the only thing I could do. For almost 6 months, it was the only thing I could do because it was outside, so I didn't feel threatened. But I couldn't go in the building. I play golf with 30 or 40 guys for 30 years, all low handicappers. Yes, we do wager a little. I couldn't go in the room. I had to send my money with people. I couldn't go in there. Couldn't be around these people I know, like you, each of you. And, but it was something I could go do and be outside. Any room I couldn't, Sally had a Bible study in here and I could not, and these are brothers and sisters in Christ that I've known for 30 years in this church. I couldn't walk in that door. I had to go back up in the parlor and sit and wait for her to get done. So it was a painful, painful little trip. But the good news is I'm okay with sharing it now. It was something I was ashamed of for a while because it's a man, you know, you shouldn't be going through that as a man. But that's my story.
Thank you.
That's wonderful. So I think given the time, I don't think we're gonna have a table break session, but I certainly imagine that we're gonna have more discussion here just in a few minutes.
Okay.
And what I did, if you want to stay right here and you can help close us out and we're. Yeah, I just want to echo, certainly for you to be up here and to have the courage to openly speak about all the significant points.